Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
I'm doing it. When I say to you, how was your weekend? I'm using it and doing it as a way to talk to you about Loyola of Chicago's weekend. Because the Ramblers are having one of the best months ever. Forget the best story of the tournament. They are maybe the best story ever. Don't want to repeat myself. I did put that out on Twitter. But they might be the best story ever. Not just the best story of this tournament. They beat Miami from the ACC 64-62 in the first round. They beat Tennessee of the SEC 63-62 in the second round. They beat the Mountain West champs, Nevada, 69-68 in the Sweet 16. Three upsets, three buzzer beaters, and then that story just kept getting better and better. However, we've seen this before, and I think we know how that story ends. We know how it goes, and then we know how it ends. You go up against a tough defensive team that smothers you. It grinds you down. It wears you down. It finds a way to win in the end, and then the dream is dead. Kansas State. That's what Kansas State did to UMBC. That's what Kansas State did to Kentucky. And that's exactly what they were going to do to Loyola. And just about everybody expected it. That was the game where the Ramblers were supposed to run out of gas. That was the game where they were supposed to run out of their magic and divine intervention. Except it didn't happen. And not only did they beat Kansas State, they beat them down. Or in the words of Pat Tillman, that was a nice, swift ass-kicking. A bludgeoning from the start. Up 12 at halftime, they never let K-State get a sniff. It was a clinic. Amazing ball movement, finding the open man, hitting the open shots. I mean, they flat carved Kansas State, a good Kansas State team. One team looked like the 11 seed who stumbled its way onto the big stage, but it wasn't the Ramblers. And after winning the first three games by a combined 4 points, they smashed their way to the Final Four by 16. And can I say, that flattered K-State because Loyola led by 23 at one point. Let me repeat that. Loyola of Chicago led their Elite Eight matchup by 23 points at one point. Or as Clayton Custer said,
We're a bunch of guys that everybody laughed at us when we thought we were going to play Division I basketball. Nobody thought that we could do any of this.
Right, and nobody's laughing right now. Not only are they playing D1 basketball, they're playing the best basketball in D1 basketball. They're dominating D1 basketball right now. I mean, it's been a rough year for college basketball's rep. But Loyola is single-handedly redeeming it, and nobody's laughing right now. And one more key point that I want to make about these guys. Don't get this twisted. They're no fluke. You cannot fluke your way to the Final Four. You might get a lucky bounce along the way, but you cannot luck your way into winning 4 games in that tournament. Just like you cannot luck your way into winning 30 games. Now, don't get me wrong. Sister Jean is still an international superstar. And at times, it does seem like she may even, in fact, have a direct line to the big man himself. But that win was about Ben Richardson, who scored 14 in the first 3 games combined, but then went off for 23, including 6 of 7 from deep. My man was on fire. Or to quote his guy Custer, quote, 23 in a bleeping game, bro? Yep. 23 in a bleeping game, bro. And Loyola is going to the Final Bleeping Four, bro. So now, the questions. Being how small they are and who they are, will they be awed? And will they fall apart when they get on that big stage? Or will they just be happy having reached the Final Four? Or both? I'm here to say, not this crew. I can't guarantee a win here, but I can guarantee they will not crack, and the moment will not be too big for them. They'd be the first to tell you that the goal is not to play on Saturday night. The goal is to play Monday night. And now they're 1 game away from that, and they're 2 away from being national bleeping champions. And best of all, while the entire world is in awe that they've gotten this far, they're not. In fact, you got a hand to these guys. They're walking around with a swagger that suggests they actually expected it. With a trip to the Final Four hanging in the balance, the impossible dream, these guys could not have had any more swagger or been any more dialed in than they were against K-State. Again, they're no fluke. They're a great defensive team. They shoot the hell out of it. They attack the basket. They move the ball well. They play extremely well together. And most importantly, they fully believe, they expect to win. They've got a hell of a coach. And a 98-year-old nun. And if they can continue doing all of that, all these things that got them there, trust me, they can beat Michigan. And if it happens, it's not going to be a huge upset. Do that and shock the world in the final, and they are officially the best story in the history of the world. Can they do it? Who you got? What do you think is going to happen? Or are they going to finally run out of luck? You know, like they were supposed to in every single round prior to this. Dennis Dodd in studio. My man, Dennis, so good to see you. How are things?
Jim, it's a pleasure. On camera now, let the clones have their shot at me, and we'll go from there.
My man, you're good. They're way too fixated on Albert Bell. Don't worry about that. You're fine. All right, so you're here in Southern California. You're at Staples Center over the weekend. Let me get right to it. Let me start with Michigan. They blow the doors off Texas A&M Thursday. They hit 14 of 24 from three-point range. Then they come back on Saturday, Dennis, and they make 4 of 22, but they still beat Florida State. What's that tell you about this Michigan team?
The thing that's most impressive about Michigan is they can play any way, and that's what struck me when I saw them play. They ran Texas A&M off the floor. You mentioned the 62% shooting. They went from their best shooting game of the season to a first game to 60, you know, contest against Florida State. And their coach, Beilein, called them pit bulls. I call them Gumbies because you can stretch them, you can hit them, you can throw them up against the wall. They'll play any way you want. I think that's why they're one of the most dangerous teams there.
I mean, Dennis, what happened to these guys? These guys, 45 days ago, were getting beaten by Northwestern. Yeah. These guys were beaten by 20 by Nebraska. This was a team that was in fifth place in the conference. How did they get this thing turned around?
2 months ago, they lost, you mentioned it, at Nebraska by 20, and they finished tied for fourth in the Big Ten. They won the Big Ten tournament. I think it's just the group of players that they have. Mo Wagner is a guy not too many people have realizing their potential. He's 6'9", but he's a big physical 6'9". The guards are short, aside from Charles Matthews, the guards are short, but they're quick, and they distribute the ball. It's distributed scoring. So I think John Beilein is one of the best coaches in the country. That's one thing.
John Beilein is a damn good coach. I tweeted that out on over the weekend. This guy's incredible, what he does with what he has. Speaking of coaches, this is a big Leonard Hamilton house. I think the guy's an excellent coach. I think he did a very, very good job with the team this season. But what do you make of the way he handled the final seconds of that game?
I think he forgot the score. I think he forgot time and place. And if you see the interview with Dana Jacobson, he kind of mutters, you know, what was the spread when she's pressing him on that? By the way, she did a great job on the interview.
She did.
Yeah, she
did. I agree.
And he goes, what was the spread? I don't think he knew, you know, they were within four with 15 or 10 seconds left. And immediately at the table when I was sitting there after the game was over, I go, why did they back off? You know, it's like, give yourself a chance. I don't think any of us thought they were going to win the game, but you got to give yourself a chance.
Extend the game any way you can.
Right.
You got a four-point game and 10 seconds left. We've seen crazy, crazy things happen. You foul. So maybe you forgot the score. I'm not really sure what happened there, but you've got a foul. All right, so what about Michigan and Loyola? How does Michigan match up with Loyola?
I think Loyola has to worry about Michigan. Now, that sounds dumb, but Loyola's on a roll, and everybody expects them to, you know, to be the Cinderella. Michigan's bigger. They're faster. If they don't hit their shots, they can smother you with defense. I looked it up, that Jim. They are, if the season ended today, it would be the fourth time in 102 years they'd lead the Big Ten in average defense scoring, in defensive scoring. Wagner has to stay out of foul trouble. Watch Charles Matthews. I've got a piece on the website today about him. He's a Kentucky transfer who averaged 1.7 points and then transferred and just has blossomed into this kind of silky, smooth guard and their leader. So I just think Michigan can take the game any way they want to take it. And Loyola's going to have to hit shots. I don't think they'll be able to hit shots against that defense.
Dennis Dodd joins us in studio. The fact that they're even here is absolutely amazing. In fact, Dennis, you've covered college sports for a long, long time. From that perspective, whether they win or not on Saturday night, how good of a story are the Ramblers?
Oh, it's the best. I'm Final Four Central. I'm 30 miles from the front door of Allen Fieldhouse and 5 minutes from Clayton Custer's high school. So I'm trying to get home to do some of this. It's a great story. It's with all this FBI investigation and what a cesspool basketball recruiting is. These aren't top 50 players. These are just ballers. You know, Dante Ingram, they had four different players step up really to get to the Final Four late. So it's just the best of the best. Sister Jean, what else are you going to say about her?
Hey, clones, start of another work week. So let me ask you this. If you work on a hot, dusty job site or in a loud, wet kitchen, you know how tough it can be to communicate clearly. But now, with new Post-it Extreme Notes, you can get your message said and get the job done in any weather condition, including rain, heat, and humidity. New Post-it Extreme Notes are water-resistant. They're made with DuraHold paper and adhesive, so they stick to concrete, drywall, raw wood, and even brick. So no matter what the task is, on whatever the job site, get your message across with new Post-it Extreme Notes. Buy them right now wherever you can get your Post-it notes. And again, it doesn't matter how hot, cold, windy, or wet, new Post-it Extreme Notes will stick on rough surfaces and in tough weather conditions. Honestly, I have never seen a product like this before, and we're doing some remodeling on our home right now, so I know they work. New Post-it Extreme Notes. Buy them today wherever you can get your Post-it notes.
I mean, to me, it's almost unfathomable. Like, Porter Moser is an amazing coach. And look, these kids can play. I mentioned this in the open, Dennis. You cannot fluke your way to the Final Four. You can't luck your way to the Final Four. But really, how do you explain it? A school that small, being where it is, the resources they have, the team that they have, is there a logical explanation as to how they're that good? Is it parity or is it something else?
Well, first of all credit to Doug Elgin, the commissioner of the Missouri Valley, who went and got them after Wichita State left. And when they got them, it was like, wow, bottom of the barrel, Loyola Chicago. That's what I thought. I didn't know anything about them. Well, with Porter Moser there, they can play. They got the three late shots to get to the regional final. Then they took out K-State. You know, you need that. Michigan needed it against Houston. Michigan got outplayed for 39 minutes. I'm not saying they don't deserve it, but you need plays like that. And we knew Clayton Custer could play. He went to Iowa State. In there wasn't a place for him, and he transferred to Loyola Chicago. He was a gym rat when he was in high school. I think won a couple of state championships.
No, there's some pedigree there. And then Richardson gets his 23, and to Clayton Custer's point, bleeping 23 in a game. Are you kidding? All right, so you mentioned you're near Final Four Central. How about Kansas? Now, while you've been covering games out here, you're very familiar, of course, with Kansas basketball and Bill Self. What do you make of the job that he's done this season? In fact, where does this rank historically among the jobs that he's done while there?
It's clearly the best coaching job he's done. And I heard somebody this morning say, well, they started out third in the country. Yeah, they started out third in the country, but they had questions in the post with Azubuike. They lost the National Player of the Year in Frank Mason. Nobody knew how LeGerald Vick or Malik Newman were going to play. In the middle of the season, LeGerald Vick and Malik Newman got benched because of effort, frankly. And Bill Self will tell you that. After they lost at home to Arizona State, giving up 95 points in Allen Fieldhouse to an Arizona State team that I don't know scored 95 against anybody else this year, he called his team soft. And one of the first things he said when he got off the court yesterday was, this isn't a soft team. He wanted to correct himself. So to have all those things come together at the right time, it's just been unbelievable.
All right, so if you have to call your shot right now, who is cutting down the nets come Monday night?
I think Kansas. I thought about it last night because I think they're a more talented version, I guess, of Loyola Chicago. I think they've been touched with the wand. And after I saw what they did to Duke, I thought Duke had that game and kind of gave it away late. I think they're the team. This, you have to think of the good juju, Jim. 10 years ago, same arena, same court or same floor, same city. The play they tied the game on last night with McCaluke's three that tied it late looked strangely like the tying three in 2008 that sent the game into overtime. I think they're kind of blessed right now.
It does seem familiar. It seems familiar, but if you want to talk about who's blessed in divine intervention, you think about Loyola. But then, I'll tell you what, Dan, if you want to talk about a team that might be the best team on the floor right now, or at least on paper, Villanova. I mean, they're absolutely loaded. We know they can shoot the heck out of it. They play defense. Even when their shots are not falling, they can beat you by playing defense. And they've got some pedigree there now. That would be their second title in 3 years if they do it. Now, let me ask you before you go. You had a piece over the week weekend, we reported that the possibility of Gonzaga joining the Mountain West. How likely is that? And then what do you make of that as a fit for the Zags and for that conference?
I think it's going to happen. That's just a prediction. I don't have any inside information, but it's like you said, it seems like a good fit. I think it's going to be totally Mark Few's call. You know, if Mark Few thinks, I don't want to lead this conference we've been in for 40 years and leave them in a lurch, it would really hurt the West Coast Conference in terms of RPI, and particularly BYU and their basketball program. But the fit would be great. It's not a money play. It's definitely not a money play, as all these other expansions were. This would be an RPI play. It would help Gonzaga's RPI playing in the Mountain West, and it would help the Mountain West having Gonzaga in there as a national power.
Now, Dennis, it's funny. Dave Whalen and I were talking over the weekend about Mark Few. It's hard to imagine, because we talk about how we approach the interviews and what we do. Hard to imagine that I ever used to ask him, hey, Mark, would you consider leaving? Hey, Mark, what about that UCLA job? Hey, Mark, what about, you know, on and on and on. I mean, it seems almost absurd that was ever a conversation back in the day.
Right, right. You're asking the wrong question. You said, would you leave the conference, the entire school? But they are a major program. We saw them over the weekend. They've got national type players, and I looked it up. The Mountain West, I think, was 9th in RPI this year. The West Coast was 14th, so there's not that much difference, but you have to understand what would happen if Gonzaga got there. Now maybe they become 7th and the West Coast is 16th, and then you go, oh, okay, I get
sure.
it. You know, now Mountain West maybe can get 2 or 3 in per year instead of 1.
Yeah, he's absolutely the standard bearer of, you can't accomplish whatever you want where yes. you are, and you do not need to leave to go. Now, we're talking about conferences. I got to ask you, as long as you're out here, how bad a tournament was this for the Pac-12?
Oh, it was horrible. They had no teams in the round of 32 for the first time since 1986. And you combine that with everything else, the abject failure that has been the Pac-12 network, the 1-8 record in bowls. I mean, at the time I wrote it, I said only United Airlines had a worse week. I mean, it was, and it's not like it's going to
Let's not gloss over
away.
That, what you just said, Dennis. 1-8 in bowl games, the NCAA tournament they just had. So, I mean, how much of a cause for concern is this on a much larger level for that conference?
Oh, I think it's huge. In an age where we want to define everything, they're doing all they can to separate themselves from being a Power 5 school. I'm talking about perception. You know, that it would be a Power 4, because you have to get to the playoff. They haven't done that. They've done it 2 of the 4 years and not last year. You know, they're absolutely last in revenue. I mentioned the network. And by the way, the Pacific time zone isn't going away for those late night starts. There's really nothing they can do about that. And people on the East Coast just don't see it. And again, they don't talk about it if they don't see it. So it's not cyclical. It's real.
Yeah, if they don't see it, then did it really happen? Dennis Dodd joins me in studio for a few more moments. No way I'd let you go without asking you about a little bit of college football. If you're Alabama, how concerned are you about Tua suffering a thumb injury on his throwing hand?
I think it complicates the quarterback battle right now. Now, you know, we thought, okay, Tua's going to win this thing. I think that was the perception after we saw what he did in the championship game. It just becomes a question of what Jalen Hurts does or how he exits. Well, now I don't think he exits after spring practice if he sees that he lost the job, because it's a broken finger, according to his dad. And he's going to have to hang on a little bit. Maybe they both stay. I mean, is that a possibility? I don't know. They're going to be okay at quarterback. I think the perception is they're just a little bit better with Tua because he's a better thrower, he's a better runner, and I think he reads defenses better.
All right, so I'm going to maximize my time with you. We're already over a little bit, but you're out here in Southern California. I know you're going to get something else done, and you had a great weekend, but I know you're not leaving without attacking something else. What else is on the agenda?
After going to Javier's last night.
Did you?
Yes.
And?
It was on fire, and it was great.
Did you go Crystal Cove, or did you go Irvine Spectrum?
Crystal Cove and the shrimp enchiladas.
Have you been before?
Oh, several times.
Okay.
Yes,
all right, so you know.
It was great.
Did not disappoint, though.
No, it was great.
Good job, Dennis.
Great.
Good job. All right. What else?
And then... this morning, Pacific time, going out to see JT Daniels at Mater Dei, the projected maybe starter at USC. But beyond that, I'm fascinated by the whole reclassifying thing. He's trying to get his high school career done in 3 years, not 3.5, like some of these guys. I just find that – I want somebody to explain it to me, how you do that. Jontay Porter, the basketball player at Missouri, did it, and they call it reclassifying. You got to be smart. You know, you got to – put everything in
your
last
semester.
What do you
make of that? What is the rush, and why are they in a hurry to get that work done?
I think the rush is what the rush is for every player who thinks he can get to the NFL in 3 years. You know, you just want to get there. I think it's consequential, and he has said so, that Sam Darnold left. I think he was going to do it anyway. But I think he's doing it because he can.
By the way, I say this every single day. Why does anybody do anything? Because they can. Right. Hey, clones, coming off the Elite Eight and on to the Final Four. And if you've already got a busted bracket, there is still a way for you to cash in on March Madness at MyBookie. If you have not signed up yet, it is not too late. It doesn't matter if you've been a player for years or you like a team because their colors match your favorite shoes. Lay down some money and score big on college basketball. Join thousands of online players and start betting at mybookie.ag. Hey, let me ask you this. Are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? Then come join MyBookie today. I'm telling you, when you win, they pay. They pay fast, and they pay without any hassles. You are wasting your time betting anyplace else. They even have in-game live betting, so you can place a bet after tip-off. Join right now, and MyBookie will match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. Use the promo code ROME to activate this offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. We're on to the Final Four, clones. Get it done. Play, win, and get paid. MyBookie.ag. We're coming off a weekend where one of the greatest sports stories in years, maybe the greatest sports story ever, is unfolding. But for some reason, you don't want to talk about that. We have one of the most perfect Final Fours that you could ever imagine. A Cinderella story and three premium programs. But that's not the thing that you're focused on. And also, I noticed you're not hitting me up to talk about the Golden State Warriors and the injuries they're dealing with. You're not even talking to me about where Ndamukong Suh might end up. Nope. Nope. Nope, nope, nope. You want to talk about a baseball player who has not had a base hit since the year 2000. It's a long, long time ago. A long time ago. There are people graduating high school this year who never saw this guy play live. But for some reason, that is the only thing that a lot of you want to talk about. All right. So let me rip that Band-Aid right off. I'll talk about it right now. You want it, you got it. Former major leaguer Albert Bell was charged Sunday with two counts of indecent exposure, one count of driving under the influence of liquor, drugs, vapor, or a combination of the above, and then one count of extreme DUI. The Phoenix Fox television affiliate reported that he was arrested at a spring training game in Scottsdale. So to recap, if you want to look at the box score, two counts of indecent exposure, one count of DUI, one count of extreme DUI while at or near a spring game. Now, there's having a bad day and having it get away from you, and then there's that. There's having a bad day, and then there's that. I mean, not just a DUI, but an extreme DUI. And not just an extreme DUI, but indecent exposure. Not that there's ever a good place to expose yourself, allegedly, but at a spring training game. My man just won the Triple Crown, allegedly. Details are still coming in, and I'll be real, I'm as curious as to know exactly how this went down, at what went down, as you are. I mean, after all, spring training games are relaxed. They're chill. They're generally not the place to get popped for extreme DUI and indecent exposure. And I am having a pretty tough time, even for this cat who runs pretty hot. I'm having a pretty tough time coming up with a scenario where a dude like that could lose his mind like that in a place like that. But if this is really what went down, that's bad. That's really bad and sad and really sad because back in the day, this guy was a force. One of the most intimidating guys in the game. I'll be straight. One of the most intimidating guys I've ever sat down and interviewed. I mean, a really intimidating guy. Somebody who could smash a ball if you left it over the plate
or smash your face if you stood in the base path. Don't believe me? Check his highlights on YouTube, and in particular, the one time he dropped that truck job on Fernando Vigna. I can remember Fernando Vigna. I love that guy. He used to come on the show quite a bit. That was an unbelievable play. And if you're too young to know that or you don't remember, quick, go to YouTube right now and look at that. I mean, so there's no denying that this guy had some issues off the field. So I'm not shocked that he's having more issues off the field. Nor am I shocked by how you degenerates are handling this. Now, I'm not sure what you ghouls are more fascinated with. The list of those charges or the mugger that accompanied it. The mugshot. And yes, I have to admit, my man looks a little rough. But of course he does. He was just arrested on multiple counts of DUI and indecent exposure. How do you think that guy's going to show up for a mugshot? I mean, what, looking like some GQ model? Yes, he looks heavier. Yes, he looks older. Yes, he looks a lot older than I expected. But as always, when all of you sending in your witty tweets are rolling with six packs, then you can talk. Until then, you ought to leave this guy alone, or at least back off. I don't need to hear from you about how he used to mash at the plate and now he mashes at the buffet, or about how he used to kill everything that was left over the plate, but now he kills everything that's left on the plate, or how he looks closer to 70 than he does 50. This guy had a rough day. He had a rough day, and it looks like he's had a rough couple of decades. I mean, it happens. It really does. So how about for the first time ever, maybe you show a little empathy. I'm looking at you, Blaze NKC.
Blase.
Blase tweeted at Jim Rome. What's poppin', Jim? Signed, Albert Doughy Bell. Hilarious, Blaze. Truly genius, Blase. Yeah, my man's heavy. My man's put on a few LBs. You might even argue that my man's fat. I don't need your Albert Taco Bell or Albert Swell or Halibut Bell tweets. Still not original, not funny, not good. Doesn't even make any sense. Nobody bloats slamming halibut. And Glenosaurus Rex, don't think that I didn't see your superbly crafted tweet at Jim Rome. Quote, why did they use a picture of the guy who ate Albert Bell? That's brilliant, G. Brilliant. It's exactly what they did. Albert Bell was arrested, but then somebody ate Albert Bell, and they just figured, ah, what the hell. Let's take a mugshot of that guy instead. Nailed it, Glenn. Nailed it. So what I'm getting at is this. I'm really not interested in any of your horrible tweets on this story. On the other hand, there is one guy that I am interested in hearing from. One of the slickest fielding shortstops I have ever seen. Omar Vizquel. Years ago, Vizquel dropped a book where he name-dropped Albert Bell. And I was talking about it one day on this show, only to have Albert call in. Either he was listening or it worked its way back to him, but he was none too happy about it. He picked up the phone, he lobbed me a call on our 800 line, and he did so he could take a run at Vizquel.
The problem, of course, was that all of Albert's bats were corked. That was the exact quote. How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, how does he know my bats were corked? Because, you know, if he wouldn't spend so much time out chasing all the tramps around American League, then he would know about my bat situation. And since when did Omar become good enough to write an autobiography? He hadn't done anything.
I mean, how good is that? How amazing is that, right? Good times. That was way back in 02. That was 2002. So Omar Vizquel was talking about Albert's corked bat. And I've told that story before. When that story dropped, I worked for ESPN. And they flew me to Cleveland to interview Albert Bell about that cork bat. Now, you saw his reaction to a teammate writing a book about the cork bat. You can imagine how he must have been or what he thought about a media guy from Los Angeles coming to fly out to Cleveland to talk to him about the cork bat. I'll never forget that flight out there. Like, man, how's this going to go? Is he going to show up? Is he going to show up and be belligerent? I mean, there's no way the guy's happy to see me, right? But he did. He showed up. He did the interview, and it went fine. And he was professional. However, when Omar Vizquel wrote a book, I mean, this whole thing about, first of all, when did this guy become important enough to have his own book? And why is he writing about my alleged cork bats when he should have been writing about, quote, all the tramps that he was running around with? I mean, this guy called the listen line to go with that. But there was more where that came from.
Well, what else did he write about in the book?
Yeah, that's the only thing so far.
You know what? I'm sure he didn't write about all his escapades on the road and all his escapades in Cleveland where him, his wife, and his kid lives. Did he talk about that?
Escapades on the road and escapades at home. Man, good times. That was way back in 02. Albert, and again, we did not call him. Thanks, Albie. We didn't call him for his reaction. Albert was either listening or somebody ran it back to him. Hey, Albert, you know, they're talking about that on the Rome show. And he just called up on his own. You know, the kind of guy that even though I interviewed him for ESPN, that's like if I'd called the Indians and said, hey, can we? And by the way, we had a great relationship with the Indians back in the day. Bart Swain was the man. We had a great relationship. But if I had called up and said, hey, can we have a conversation with Albert Bell? The answer would have been no. Albert Bell was not doing a lot of media, but he's called up on the listen line that day. I can remember Kenny Lofton calling up on the listen line one day. I think more Indians called up on the listen line one day over something they didn't like. And then there were the great guys with the Indians. My man Ryan Garko back in the day leading the charge and bringing four guys in studio, including CeCe Sabathia. Anyway, now I digress. So while I really don't want or need any of your lame tweets and emails off this or on this topic, Omar Vizquel, I mean, he really does deserve equal time at this point, right? If he wants, he can cut the line to come in. See, so clones, I've talked about this. Now can I go back to talking about sports and athletes who are still playing the game, who are competing? And again, with Albert Bell, I mean, my man's got an issue or two. That's bad, but that's sad. That's sad. I hope he gets the help that he needs. I mean, there are bad days, and then there's that. That is sad. So if you don't mind, having said that, as always, I am showing the kind of empathy that a lot of you do not have the capability to display or the empathy within. Can I have my show back? Can I go back to talking about athletes? Give me back my show. Give me back my show. Give me back my show. Trust me, I want my show back worse than he wants his son back. Dear Romy. Are you sure Albert Belly didn't get arrested for eating the cop that pulled him over instead of an extreme DUI? Signed, Roland in Pittsburgh. Unwar Omar Vizquel. Hey, Roland, the only reason I read that, not because it's good, but because you're from Pittsburgh. I got a soft spot for the Berg. No, he didn't eat a cop. And the guy in the picture did not eat Albert. I said his last base knock was in 2000. It's a long time ago, all right? 15 years out, 18 years out, 20 years out, some athletes gain a little weight. Hey, ready for this? Some human beings gain a little weight. I don't know. I look at that guy and I see something pretty sad and something pretty concerning. You look at that guy and you see a fat guy. It's amazing, right? It's kind of like that thing like when you're in school, when you look at that picture, like what do you see? I see an old lady. Remember that picture where half you see the old lady and half you see the beautiful young lady? 1/1000th of us see a guy who's got some issues, who needs some help. In this audience, I mean. And 99.9 of you see a fat guy that you think you could spin into some joke about his name. I'm not saying I'm better than you, but I'm better than a lot of you. This Monday edition of the Daily Jungle brought to you in part by Fan Exchange. Are you thinking about buying tickets to your favorite sports, concert, or theater event? I mean, let's face it, we're on to the Final Four right now. Maybe you want to experience that. then head on over to FanExchange.com for a safe, easy, and reliable experience. Tickets purchased on FanExchange are always guaranteed. No getting to the gate and worrying about getting in. So whether it is March Madness or MLB Opening Day, which is right around the corner, WrestleMania, Coachella, or a Broadway musical, Fan Exchange gets you closer to the action, and you can find the very best seats at the very best prices at FanExchange.com. Use your promo code Rome. Once again, promo code Rome, and take 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. Fan Exchange, we have tickets. JD Martinez is my guest. JD, really nice to have you on the program. Good morning. How are you?
Morning, guys. I'm doing great, man. Doing great. Happy to be here.
Good to have you here. All right, so you had a pretty unusual offseason in the fact that you were a free agent and did not sign until last month, despite the fact that you had an enormous season last year. So let me ask you, what was the whole free agency experience like, and then how did it feel to finally sign with the Boston Red Sox?
Free agency experience was definitely unique in a sense, especially given the market and how everything kind of played out last year. But, you know, it was one of those things where it was stressful at times. It was exciting other times, stressful again, exciting, back and forth. It was kind of just like a roller coaster in a sense. But it was definitely refreshing and exciting just to be able to land here in Boston and be, you know, a part of such a great team and a part of a team that's, you know, always competitive and always wants to win.
Now, so if we go back on your 19th birthday, for instance, your sister got you tickets to a Yankees-Red Sox game, but not just any tickets. They were Mike Lowell's tickets. What do you remember about that game and that day?
That's funny. That's funny. My sister's having a field day with this. She's loving this, by the way.
Right.
I just remember my sister was actually going to Boston, Boston College at the time, doing her dental study, getting her degree in that, and she just told me, she goes, Jay, I want you to come up. I wanna do something special for you for your birthday. And I was like, well, what do you got? This and that. And she goes, just come up. So she actually bought my ticket, my flight. I flew up there, and then she surprised me with Yankee Red Sox tickets, and it was crazy. Like, you know, growing up in Miami, you've never experienced atmosphere like Boston Red Sox Yankee atmosphere. So kind of just walking into that atmosphere kind of just made me fall in love with the game even more. I was like, dude, this is crazy. Like, I've never seen baseball like this. This is what baseball's about. This is how I always almost envisioned it since I was a kid. And, you know, surprisingly enough, I was like, Myra, how'd you get these tickets? Like, these are like impossible to get. And she goes, she actually works with Michael's father and brother. She was doing like an internship or working alongside of them. I don't know exactly how, but Michael's brother or father actually asked them for the tickets from Mike Lowell, and he left us the tickets.
I mean, that's an amazing story in and of itself. But then,
yeah.
And when you think about that, and JD,
crazy.
You think of the kind of reaction you had when you went into that ballpark and you felt that hot, that heat and that fire and that passion. I mean, is this a reach, or did this play a role in you wanting to play for the Red Sox and sign with the Red Sox? Did it resonate like that for you all this time?
No. You know, it's just crazy. It's just crazy how everything works out. I just remember when I was in high school, and my my friends back home used to always make fun of me. They still do make fun of me, saying that, oh, JD's a bandwagon Red Sox fan. Back when they had, you know, Pedro and Manny and Poppy, and, you know, they had that whole team where they were just fun to watch, and I just kind of fell in love with that team. I mean, for it to end up that way is crazy. I don't know how to say it. It's just one of those things where, what are the odds, really?
JD Martinez joining us. In fact, I could argue the whole thing's kind of crazy. I mean, you had 45 home runs last year. You've got 128 home runs since 2014. So the fans know the numbers that you're putting up. At the same time, not a lot of fans know your whole story. So take us back. When you were selected by the Astros in the 20th round at Inova Southeastern University, after you signed, they sent you to the Appalachian League. What was that experience like?
Oh man, it was it was kind of crazy. You know, I was expecting to go over there and play. You know, I was expecting to go and be around. You know, like, it's funny. Let's start from the beginning. When they told me that I was going to go to the New York Penn League, Tri-City Valley Cats at the time, and they kind of told me, like, you know, that's, later on I find out that's where all the college guys go from the draft. Where I actually went was the Appalachian League, and that's where all the high school guys go out of the draft. So I kind of went to a clubhouse where all the guys were almost, they were younger than me and fresh out of high school when I was out of college. So I remember just being there, and I was the sixth outfielder at the time. I wasn't even playing. And I remember our center fielder the week before, actually, no, that's what it was. Like a couple days before, one of our outfielders gets called up. So they kind of move it up. Now I'm fifth in line. The center fielder's running in the outfield, pulls his hamstring. Then after he pulls his hamstring, they put the other guy in left, move the left fielder to center. The very next ball, guy hits a ball to left field. The guy runs into the fence and splits his chin. He has to get stitches. So then Rodney Linares, the manager at the time, is like, JD, get out there, go to left. And I was like, all right, you know, like this is my chance almost. Go out there. And I do really well. So the next day I go out and I play again. I do well again. Well, now the kid that has stitches is almost like, okay, he's ready to play. So the front office in Houston is like, listen, this guy's got to play. And, you know, thanks to Rodney Linares, he's like, listen, JD's got to play. I'm putting him in there. And he needs to play. He's got a hot bat right now. He's swinging the bat really well. I got to give this kid a chance. And they kind of said, okay, we'll just give him a couple days and that's it. Well, fortunately for me, I was able to just get on a hot streak and run with it. And in a sense, you know, kind of forced their hand and, you know, made myself a prospect in that organization at the time.
Yeah, it's so great you laid that story out like that because, as I said, people know about the long ball the last few years. Not everybody knows that backstory. And to our original point, the whole thing is crazy. I mean, the whole journey really is wild. You start putting up the numbers and you start to get the respect you deserve. But at the same time, JD, you used to write 6'11", 6'1", on your batting gloves as a reminder that you were the 611th draft pick. You're an all-star. You're a silver slugger right now. You've got the big contract. Do you feel like you've arrived and proven everybody wrong, or is there still a part of you that's got that 611 in the back of your mind that you use as fuel and motivation?
Yeah, definitely. You know, this game is crazy. This is a game where it doesn't matter what you do or what you've done in this game. You know, I can go today and hit, you know, in a game and hit 3 home runs. And everyone's going to say, hey, JD's awesome, this and that, JD's great. Then I come back tomorrow and I go 0-for-4 with 4 strikeouts, and everyone's going to say, JD sucks. You know, that's the game we play. That's sports. That's how it is. So to kind of get to that level where I've arrived, it's you never get there. You know, you get there once you retire and you look back at your career and you say, wow, I had a really good career. Then you can kind of, I guess, look back and, you know, kind of enjoy what you've done and, you know, really just embrace it and say, look, wow, I've had an amazing career. But while you're playing, it's one of these things is sports is, what are you doing for me now? What are you doing for me lately? I don't care what you did. That was last year. That was, you know, last game. You got to come out. You got to do it again. And that's kind of how I take it. You know, every day I look at it in that sense. You know, if I hit a home run, okay, great. Thanks, guys. Yeah, great game. But who am I facing next? If I strike out, okay, that happened. Who am I facing next? Like, what's my next challenge? What's my next obstacle? That's kind of how I look at this game and kind of how I look at my career.
You know what? If I've got time, I'm going to circle back to that, but I want to ask you, you're working with Carhartt today. What are you doing with those folks? What's your day look like?
Yeah, man, it's awesome. You know, I'm partnering up with Carhartt, and, you know, we're actually giving away tickets to opening day to every market out there. That's having opening day at home, and they're actually going to be hiding tickets, almost like an Easter egg hunt, out in the streets. And you know, the players are going to be tweeting about it, kind of giving clues on where these fans could go to find the tickets for opening day. You know, if there's any fans out there that are interested in getting some free tickets to opening day, you go to Carhartt.com and you can find the tickets there, and you know, not the tickets, but the information where to find the tickets there. So it's pretty cool. It's fun. It's a little game, and I think it's for a good cause, and it should be fun for the fans.
So I was checking out this fight over the weekend, and there have been some pretty iconic, disrespectful, straight up, savage moments in sports. I'm thinking AI stepping over Ty Lue, the beard, soul-snatching Wes Johnson, Joey Bats flipping the hickory stick into orbit after crushing a jack job in the 2015 ALDS. Each of those moments dripping with equal parts swag, equal parts disrespect. But none of those moments are in the same zip code. Hell, maybe even the same planet as what went down at Legacy Fighting Alliance 36. Now, if you're not familiar with the LFA, it's an MMA promotion that's been putting on fights for over a year now. On Saturday night, there was a fight between Drew Chatman and Irvins Ayala. It will be remembered forever as the day that sportsmanship may have died the most heinous death ever. Halfway through the first round, and if you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you'll see the video. Halfway through the first round, the most bizarre sequence in recent memory played out in real time. Irvins Ayala lands a right kick that drops Chatman to his back. But on the way down, with a hammer fist, Ayala bangs his face right into the knee of Chatman and pretty much knocks himself out. Now, that alone would have been a wild turn of events in and of itself. Ayala went from a leg sweep to a hammer fist to a sleep in about 1 second. But it's what happened next that has everybody's gap on the floor. Because after Chatman got out from under Ayala, who again was knocked out on his stomach, Chatman jumps on Ayala's back and front flips right off of him. You heard me. Chatman got on his opponent's lifeless back, stood on him, jumped up on him, and used it as a diving board. I've never seen anything like that in my life. This dude's out cold, face first in the canvas, and this guy jumps on him and uses it to propel himself into a front flip. This guy's out cold, face down, after a freak self-inflicted knockout, and Chatman's going all Greg Louganis off his back. Gotta say, nothing really swaggy about that. That's not AI or the beard or Joey Bats. I mean, that's straight up Mount Bagmore stuff right there. One of the most disrespectful things I've ever seen in sports. I mean, what? You didn't want a cannonball off the guy? Corkscrew off the guy? I mean, don't divers get a few attempts to improve their scores? Front flipping off of a dude who, I mean, not go like half gainer. Front flipping off a dude who's cold on his stomach is right on par with like graveyard urination. It's tasteless, man. It's bad. Bad, bad form. Bad form. And in that moment, my man seemed pretty proud of himself too. Because not only did he score a fluke win after Ayala pretty much knocked himself out, and not only did he use Ayala's spine as a high dive or trampoline, but he actually looked over at his crew and flashed this giant, did you see that kind of smile. You see me? Front flip off a dude who's asleep. And I nailed the landing. Did you see that? I mean, well played, my man. Because the front flip off Ayala's back got you instantly DQ'd. Disqualified because, get this, there are actually rules about standing on a guy's back who's knocked out. Who knew? You can't do that? Since when? You're not allowed to stand on a guy's back when he's out cold face first. Not only did it cost him a fight that he had just won, he has now been suspended 90 days, and his pay is being withheld. As always, hope it was worth it. What a memorable professional debut. Just like Chatman drew it up, I'm sure. Now, for what it's worth, he did apologize. And he does seem kind of beat up over it. Quote, I don't deserve to get paid for that. My mother has to see that. That video is priceless. I'll give you that, bro. It is that. That video is priceless. Actually, it's not priceless. There's a price on that. You lost the fight. You're suspended for 90 days. You do the math. Quote, I have to look back at that and live with regret every single day. End quote. He sounds sorry. I'd be sorry too. If there was a video of me going gymnastics, like off the balance beam, off a dude who might have been dead for all I knew, I'd be pretty sorry. And I'd be even more sorry if that video was already viewed more than 1.5 million times and counting. making the whole thing worse and almost unbelievable is that Chapman's nickname is, wait for this, 1 second longer. His nickname, The Honorable. Like, you can't make that stuff up. Call me insane, but I don't think anybody will gloss the most dishonorable dude, maybe in MMA history, The Honorable anymore. You kind of lose that title the second you treat your opponent's lifeless back as a trampoline. Again, this dude was face first, on the mat, out cold, and for all we knew, dead. Good news, though. Now we all know your name, your real name. Too bad it's for front flipping off a guy that had knocked himself out. Hey, I understand that whole heat of the moment thing. I really do. Man, you can't do front flips off a guy who's face first on the canvas. If you want to do a front flip after this guy knocks himself out, you go right ahead and do that. But not off his back.
Hi, I'm doing good. And how are you doing, Jim?
I'm so good, Diana. Everything's great on this end.
Yes, I know. I was just so thrilled that KU got into the Final Four yesterday. But I want to especially thank you for saying that everyone there deserves to be there. I have been watching Loyola. I watched lots and lots of college basketball, not just KU. And in this tournament, they have been running plays and surprising all the teams because they're doing things that nobody has done to them before.
Good night now!